Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. An aphorism is an expression of general truth or a principle observed through experience. I remember first learning this word when the practice of yoga blessed my life in the late 1980s, and I picked up a copy of The Yoga Aphorisms of Patanjali. This week on Vox Novus, with the approach of my 70th solar return, I will share some of those principles and truths that I have experienced in my life and have labeled the Aphorisms of Furman. This very personal edition of Vox Novus will share some of the aphorisms, thoughts, poetry and prose, and ideas that have come through me. Having reached my 70th year, I hope that this sharing reflects my experience and that what I offer will be of benefit or comfort or even engender a few laughs for you, my dear listeners. I'll start with something I shared recently. Prior to my joining the United States Air Force in 1973, my mother asked a friend of hers who was an astrologer to do a chart for me. This is what she shared in that chart. I would have a major health challenge in the service, but would recover and be fine. She was right. That my desire for fatherhood would be strong, but I would only have one or two children. She was right. That I would make my fortune in metals. Without seeking it, I had a 44-year career in the welding industry. She was right. And finally, she said, I would spend my senior years in a foreign land. I'm afraid she was right. I mentioned that that astrological chart indicated I would have a severe illness, but I would recover from it. In 1975, I was stationed in Korea, and I was having a problem with my back. A friend suggested that I have acupuncture done, and I said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. I did not know a couple of things. Number one, in those days, the needles that the acupuncturist used were not disposable, and the sterilization techniques were not the best. Number two, I did not know that hepatitis B was endemic in Korea, meaning that many people carried it even though they didn't manifest the illness themselves. In any event, I had the acupuncture done, and my back was feeling better, and about 2 weeks later, I woke up one morning, and I looked in the mirror, and my eyes were turning yellow. And I said, uh-oh, something's not right. And I went to the military hospital, and they looked at me and said, you have hepatitis, and they admitted me. I got progressively sicker over the next week. I had lost my appetite, had no desire to eat whatsoever, was losing weight. And one day, the doctor came in and asked me if I had a will. And I said, no, I was 22 years old at the time. I said, why do I need a will? And he said, because you're very seriously ill, we don't think you're going to make it, and we want to make sure your affairs are in order. In any event, they had actually sent a telegram to my mother back in New York through the Red Cross saying that your son is very seriously ill, his prognosis is not good, and they would get back to her, which obviously upset her and disturbed her. They were also treating me differently than the other patients who were in the same ward with me. They were giving me shots of vitamin K, which I didn't understand at the time. And one day I heard a voice in my head that said, ask the doctor for a picture of a healthy liver. And having learned to listen to that inner voice since childhood, I decided to do so. And the doctor came in, and I asked him if he had a picture of a healthy liver. And he said, why? And I said, I'd just like to look at a picture of a healthy liver. He brought me an anatomy book and sort of snickered when he handed it to me and said, here's the book, and here's the picture of the healthy liver. And I began to look at the picture and study it, and all of a sudden, the voice said, put the book down and place your palms over your abdomen, over the area of the liver. And I did, and I started to feel this warm and tingling sensation, and I don't know how long it lasted, but at some point, I fell asleep. The next morning at 5 a.m., the nurse came in, apologized for awakening me, and said she had to draw blood, and she did. 2 hours later, she came back, again apologizing, saying that the laboratory had messed up my samples and needed to take another draw. An hour later, the doctor came in and asked me what I had done the night before. I told him about looking at the healthy liver, about putting the book down, about placing my palms over my abdomen, about feeling this warm and wonderful tingling sensation, and he looked at me and said, "You're crazy." And I said, "Why am I crazy?" And he said, "Last night, your liver enzymes were such that we did not think you would survive the night, and this morning they're almost normal, and we've never seen a patient recover in the fashion that you recovered." As the astrologer had predicted for me, I had a complete recovery. Now, you might think that would have been my aha moment about healing, about energy healing, but it took several more years for me to reawaken and pursue the path of Reiki healing and healing energy. When the seeker is ready, the path will open. From the Aphorisms of Furman. My spiritual and healing path reopened in the 1980s. I attended a series of New Age gatherings at the home of a wonderful woman who brought in guest speakers on a number of topics. On one of those evenings, I did not resonate with the information being shared. This lovely woman, in her early 80s at the time, was very empathic and sensed my discomfort. As the evening drew to a close, she asked if I would stay for a few minutes after everyone else had left. When we were alone, she lovingly took my hands and looked into my eyes with the expression of a mother comforting a son. She then said something that changed my life. She said, "Victor, God does not require that we be holy, but would love for us to be whole." She conveyed the immediate wisdom that we should let go of that which we do not resonate with, embrace that which we do, and find wholeness in the process. Her kindness and wisdom changed my life, and I will be forever grateful for her precious gift. To be aware. A. Aspire. W. Wonder. A. Align. R. Resonate. E. Embrace. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Throughout my life, I've experienced the old adage shared by Alexander Graham Bell, "When one door closes, another opens." I've learned that we must express thanks for what we leave behind the closed door and the willingness to step through the new open door with courage, purpose, and gratitude. From the Aphorisms of Furman. We're very blessed to have a small garden in front of our New York home, and every year in springtime, the azaleas come and share their glory and beauty with us, and it inspired this poem called "The Lesson of the Azaleas." They return each spring in their full glory, without our hand intending. Leave in 3 weeks a very short story, but no sadness in this ending, for they grace us with signs of summer's return, lifting our spirits with cheer. And we know they'll be back and blossom again, one full turn of the wheel of the year. And the lesson they share, with beauty and grace, transition is just nature's way. A reminder we all will return to this place and blossom on some shining day. I had an insight a couple of years ago. Perhaps this is something others have found, but this was a new experience for me. I've been blessed with a great memory. The hard drive in my brain seems to be very expansive, but like others who have walked this planet for a while, data retrieval is not as fast as when I was younger. when I've tried to remember something and spent a lot of time using associations to force the memory, I struggled and eventually it did come to the surface, but often hours later. The insight came when I began my forced process of remembering and then let go. And to my amazement, the memory came back immediately after I stopped trying. I experimented with this a few times, and it worked every time. Therefore, at least for me, initiating the search and getting out of the way seems to be my method of fast access and retrieval. The human mind never ceases to amaze me. In this life, you must ask for what you want. Just make certain you know what you want before you ask for it. From the Aphorisms of Furman. It may look right, it may sound right, but if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not right. Trust your gut. From the Aphorisms of Furman. This is something that I was thinking about a couple of years ago with the advent of COVID and all the challenges we were facing. If you were told that humanity and this planet we call our home could be healed and made whole, saved, by every human being extending love and compassion to one another, forgiving one another for hurts real or perceived, sharing with our sisters and brothers in need, and being stewards of the earth, would you take part? If the alternative was an extinction event, would you take part? This is not about religion, end-time speculation, eschatology, or any specific or imminent event, just something to ponder. My personal answer would be, of course, I've already started. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Quotation: You may hate the war, but never hate the ones that fight, for they do not choose when or where to fight or even die. All they choose was to protect who they love and even the people they don't know. An unknown quote. May we pray for our fallen. May we pray for those who remain and serve. May we pray for the fallen and injured innocent. May we pray for a world in which we never have to pray for the fallen of war again. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Preparing to officiate a funeral a couple of years ago, I learned of the passing of a friend. Every day brings so many posts of people sharing their losses and grief. From personal loss, and also having officiated many funerals in my 25 years since ordination, there is one message that I would share. Tomorrow is never guaranteed. If you love someone, tell them today. If they have enriched your life in any way, thank them today. If you had a disagreement or a falling out, mend that today. We all grieve loss differently, but the burden is lighter when every time we say goodbye, we have said it with love. I love you. I am grateful for you. I am sorry if I have ever done anything to hurt you. Please forgive me. And I forgive you for any hurt, real or perceived. From the Aphorisms of Furman. A couple of years ago, someone asked me how to establish a regular meditation practice. This person said they might set it up on their calendar app with a notification in advance or use other digital forms of being advised when to meditate. I responded that the Buddha and his followers, the Swamis, the Zen masters, and the yogis and yoginis of old did not have cell phones, computers, or even rudimentary timepieces. They used their internal clocks, along with the natural cycles of life, to know when to meditate, as well as pray, eat, sleep, work, and everything else. My advice to my friend, begin by meditating when you wake up and again before going to bed. Start with a few minutes during each session, closing with a prayer of gratitude for this very personal, quiet, and reflective time. When comfortable, add another session during the day if desired. With practice, your internal app will manage the rest. The 23rd Psalm says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." My wonderful spiritual teacher and founder of the New Seminary for Interfaith Studies, Rabbi Joseph Gelberman, would emphasize that the line says, "Walk through the valley of the shadow of death and not stay there." I know so many of us have suffered great losses. I also know that grief is unique to each of us, and we have our own way of processing it. As I remember my family and friends that have transitioned, the memory of the love and joy we shared is the blessing. And for me, this blessing lifts my feet as I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. From the Aphorisms of Furman. A friend of mine was trying to define what will transpire, positive or negative, in the great changes that are coming. For those of us holding the space with positive energy, compassion, and light, we will be on call to shepherd those who need reassurance and love. We've been preparing for this lifetime after lifetime. We've served before, and we will serve again. Blessed are the light workers, for they bring illumination, healing, and love. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Like most of us, there are times when I have my doubts about the value of what I share in this world. I'll question whether the effort is worthwhile and if my time might be better spent on other pursuits. Then someone leaves a message, sends an email, or calls me and thanks me for that time when I shared a few compassionate words, some advice that came from spirit, or just listened when they needed to be heard. I might not even remember that time or what I was called to do or share, but the gratitude extended reminds me to keep doing what I'm doing. If one person's day is made a little better, then the effort is most certainly worthwhile. From the Aphorisms of Furman. When my mother passed in January of 2020, it gave me an opportunity to reflect upon her life and how her wisdom shaped me, my brother, and sister. I call this life lessons I learned from my mother. Once, when I had a very bad toothache and the dentist was not available, my mother said, "Take comfort in the knowledge that the pain will pass." She was right. She taught me that the thermostat on ovens is not always accurate and to set the temperature 25 degrees higher. She was right. She taught me that it is better to have people laugh with you than laugh at you. She was right. She taught me to be generous both materially and spiritually. She was right. She taught me how to hug heart to heart. She was right. She taught me that no matter how difficult times were, we never wanted for the things we truly needed. She was right. She taught me that it's okay to grieve after losing a loved one and that tears are very powerful medicine. She was right. She taught me, above all, to love. She was right. She was a deeply spiritual woman who taught her children to be responsible while being compassionate and loving. I am grateful for her shaping the man that I have become and for her deep and abiding love. She will never be further away than my heart. Thank you for your wisdom, Mom. I will cherish your lessons, life, and love forever. Someone said, when you can't control what's happening, control the way you respond to what's happening, for that is where your power is. I remember the opening from A Course in Miracles. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Reality exists by our creation. If we create with positive energy, compassion, and love, we are fulfilling our purpose. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Several friends have recently posted about being disappointed by those they have reached out to and offered listening and advice. The essence of compassion is that we never truly know what the other person is experiencing or feeling. Often, advice, even with the best intentions, runs contrary to what they want or are capable of hearing and understanding. This may result in resentment and even backlash. If we are called to offer advice, we have two choices. We may sense that it may not be welcomed and simply withhold it, or offer it and not be attached to the response, positive or negative. The secret is sacred, intuitive listening. By listening carefully, compassionately, and with our hearts, we will know the appropriate choice. As the Greek philosopher Epictetus said, we have two ears and one mouth, so that we may listen twice as much as we speak. And we'll be back with more poetry and prose and aphorisms after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at BelongingBeginsWithUs.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, and this evening I'm sharing with you my poetry, my prose, and the aphorisms of Furman, little ideas that have come through me over the years. I'm going to start this segment by sharing a very powerful and very personal story with you. The period between Thanksgiving 1997 and the first 2 weeks of January 1998 carry bittersweet memories for me. It was during that time that my former partner, Judy, transitioned from this life. Ours was a special story. It was a story of synchronicity, of a life-changing and affirming relationship, of learning, healing, personal growth, and a very profound love. My first marriage ended because of a diametrically opposed spiritual difference. My path was expanding and inclusive. Her path was contracting and exclusive. It was 1995, and I was leading meditation and healing groups at the time and teaching Reiki. At one of those gatherings, a friend mentioned a woman he knew who had been diagnosed with breast cancer and wanted to learn about visualization meditation and energy healing. I called her, and we arranged to meet on a Sunday morning. I arrived at her house, and I was about to ring the bell, and she opened the door. As we looked at each other, she pointed at me, and I pointed at her, and we simultaneously exclaimed, "It's you." We had never met in this lifetime, but there was an absolute recognition of having traveled together before. Our relationship ensued, first with healing, teaching, and a growing friendship, and rapidly evolved into love. We both came into the relationship with lessons to learn from one another. She needed to learn that she was loved and worthy of that love. I needed to learn to love and believe in myself. These lessons unfolded as we lived the extremes of life together in our mid-40s. I was by her side as she went through chemotherapy and radiation treatments, and she encouraged me to pursue the interfaith education and training that was necessary for the growth of my path. She was a special education teacher, a surrogate mom beloved by teens from broken and difficult homes whose lives she helped to turn around. She invited me to teach meditation and chanting to them, which they hungrily and joyfully took to. This partnership unfolded in this and so many other ways. We traveled together to places that she loved. She introduced me to Sedona and the Grand Canyon, a place that she considered to be her church on earth. We drove up to Acadia National Park in Maine and enjoyed the breathtaking view of the Atlantic from atop Acadia Mountain. Each of these trips was sacred, a pilgrimage to places she loved and that I resonated with on a soul level. I mentioned that she encouraged me to pursue interfaith training. In the 1990s, if you wanted to practice hands-on healing in a hospital, you either needed to be a licensed massage therapist or ordained in a faith where laying on of hands was considered a sacrament. As I had a full-time career, massage school was out of the question. She introduced me to the New Seminary of New York, one of the first interfaith seminaries in the United States, founded by Rabbi Joseph Gelberman and a group of clergy representing almost every major religion. It was a 2-year part-time program for those who had established careers with a spiritual calling that would enhance their practice. Judy and I enrolled together and began our interfaith journey, another life-changing experience. The following year, I noticed that Judy, who was an extremely articulate woman, starting to malaprop. She would speak words that did not make sense in the context of what she was saying and not realize it. I began to sense something was seriously wrong and reached out to her oncologist. The doctor had told me she had skipped her 6-month follow-up scan and urged me to bring her to the hospital. I convinced Judy we needed to see her doctor and took her to the hospital. An MRI delivered the frightening diagnosis. There was a tumor in the left side of her brain near the center that controls speech. Surgery was scheduled, and we were cautioned that she might lose her ability to speak. I stood by her bedside while she was in recovery. She opened her eyes, smiled at me, and said, "Victor Furman, I love you." My heart melted as I heard her speak. 6 months later, we went for a follow-up. The scan showed that the cancer had spread to other parts of her body. Doctors offered her additional chemotherapy and other treatments, but suggested the ultimate prognosis was not good, and that ultimately, she would lose the fight. I held her as she cried softly, and my tears mingled with hers. She made the decision to live her remaining time with joy and dignity. On November 16, 1997, we graduated from the new seminary and were ordained at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York. As president of our class, I gave the graduation speech and devoted a portion of it to honoring Judy. sharing how she had touched and changed the lives of so many young people, and lauding her courage and dignity as she fought the battle of her life. She sat there with our graduating class, smiling and crying at the same time. The following week, we were preparing for Thanksgiving. My mother and sister were joining us, as well as several friends. I was in the kitchen cooking, and Judy was showering. She came out of the shower and joined me in the kitchen, beaming and smiling as she watched me prepare the food. Suddenly, her smile changed into blank expression. Her eyes rolled back, and I realized she was having a seizure. I ran to catch her before she collapsed and gently set her on the floor. Her breathing was labored, and she lost consciousness as I called 911. The EMTs rushed to her hospital, where the doctor spoke the words that I was dreading, but I knew that I would ultimately hear. She's had a good run, but now it's time for hospice. I shuddered and cried, reaching out to our respective families and sharing the sad news. I decided on home hospice as I wanted her to be comfortable and in familiar surroundings. The wonderful staff at Cabrini Hospice Center gave me a quick training on what would be needed and the supplies to set things up at home. After the bed and home equipment was in place, the ambulance brought her home from the hospital. She was in and out of coma until the second week of December, when she slipped into total coma. The wonderful hospice home attendant was with her during the day, and I was beside her after work at night. I learned to change the IVs, maintain the oxygen, and administer the morphine as instructed by the visiting nurse. My nights on the floor next to her were spent listening to her breathing and perhaps a faint voice if she came out of coma. I prayed and cried nightly. On Christmas Day, I was washing her when she opened her eyes and asked me what day it was. I told her it was Christmas, and she managed to smile and said, "Merry Christmas." She asked how long she'd been unconscious, and I told her. She asked if I was okay, and I told her I was fine. Then she said something that I did not expect. She asked me to kill her. I asked her if she was suffering or in pain, and she said no. I asked her why she wanted me to end her life, and she told me she did not want me to suffer. Taking her hand in mine, I told her I was not suffering, that I loved her, and would do everything to keep her comfortable, and that the final decision was up to her and God. She smiled softly, closed her eyes, and slipped back into coma. On January 5th of 1998, the doctor came to the house and suggested from her breathing that her time was near. He said that at this point in hospice, they would, at the family's request, disconnect the IV glucose feeding. He said the decision was up to me and her father. After a brief discussion, he agreed with me that it was time to let her go. That evening, I prayed and asked her higher self for permission to disconnect the feeding. As if an angel were whispering in my ear, I heard a soft voice say, "Yes." I kissed her gently on the forehead and disconnected the glucose. On January 8th, I knew from her breathing that time was short and realized I needed a suit for the funeral. I ran out to the clothing store and halfway there heard my inner voice say, "Turn around." When I got back to the house, the hospice worker said her breathing was very shallow. Judy's father joined me at her bedside and we each held her hand. Within a few minutes, she was gone. I co-officiated her funeral. One of our friends and classmates sang "The Rose," Judy's favorite song. I closed her eulogy with these lines from Khalil Gibran. "And all knowledge is vain, save when there is work. And all work is empty, save when there is love. And when you work with love, you bind yourself to yourself and to one another and to God." I closed by saying that Judy worked with love and was bound in our hearts forever. 25 years later, and I share this for those who have lost loved ones and are grieving, my relationship with Judy was life-changing. She opened my heart to me and taught me how to love fully and unconditionally. Her guidance and suggestion that I attend the new seminary paved a road of future service and a path that allowed me to share the training and pastoral skills with others, including service as a chaplain for the Red Cross after 9/11. It also opened the door to finding new love through synchronicity to a woman who attended that graduation as she was coming into the seminary and was touched by the words I honored Judy with and found her way into my heart, bringing soulmate love to me once again. And of course, this is my beloved wife, Lori Sue Brockway. Our teacher and mentor, Rabbi Gelberman, always cited an ancient Hebrew expression, Hakol Beseda. Translated, he said, it means everything is in order. But he took it one step further, saying, everything is unfolding in divine order. He said, we may not understand or like what is transpiring, but ultimately it is part of a higher plan. In the context and immediacy of illness, suffering, and loss, one might question acceptance of this idea. Extended beyond what is before us, for those who have eyes to see, there is a far-reaching plan at work. Blessings of this nature are there for those who are open to them and ready to receive them. In the words of Ray Thomas of the Moody Blues, just open your eyes and realize the way it's always been. Just open your mind and you will find the way it's always been. Just open your heart, and that's a start. I live my life following the essential meaning of these two lines. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, from the Bible and iterations in virtually every faith. And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. From the Beatles. For me, that's it. From the Aphorisms of Furman. In my career, when I would teach young sales and customer service staff, I would emphasize the most important thing they could do was to take ownership of customer satisfaction. As an example, I shared the story of a conference at a Marriott hotel that I attended several years ago. During a presentation, the overhead projector malfunctioned. The speaker walked out into the hallway looking for someone to assist. A woman from housekeeping was cleaning the hallway. She stopped and asked him what was wrong. After he explained, she literally took him by the hand and escorted him to the engineer's office. She stayed with him as the engineer returned and fixed the projector. When done, she asked him if she could be of further assistance. He smiled, thanked her, and she returned to her cleaning. This woman took ownership of his complete satisfaction, exemplary of what the Marriott organization instills in their staff. When I teach spiritual lessons, I also share this story. I share that taking ownership also applies to the way we approach our brothers and sisters in need of help and compassion. As someone who finds deeper meaning in words, I look at ownership and realize that if we remove the letters N and R, we arrive at oneship. This represents both the oneness of all humanity and our beautiful Mother Earth, the one ship we all are sailing on together. We have the choice of sailing or sinking together. May our love, kindness, and compassion set the course for calm seas and smooth sailing. We can sail through any crisis together if we take ownership of one another. During holidays and birthdays and other special occasions, people go out and search for gifts, special gifts for those that they love. I suggest that there are special gifts, gifts that cannot be purchased online or in a store, that will be so welcomed by those who receive them. Here are a few gift ideas. A warm hug with permission for someone who needs to feel loved. A gift of listening non-judgmentally and without the need to interject for someone who feels that they are not heard. A genuine smile and thank you by name for someone who is serving you in a store. A helping hand by offer, may I give you a hand, and acknowledgement, yes, thank you, for someone who needs physical assistance in any activity, including carrying groceries, shoveling snow, loading a car, anything. Telling someone you love them just as they are and meaning it. You just need to pause, take a breath, and take time for these simple expressions of kindness in a world that truly needs them now. From the Aphorisms of Furman. And we'll be back with more after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going OM? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Vox Novus. Tonight I'm doing the Aphorisms of Furman, those little pithy sayings that have come through me over the years, as well as some poetry and prose and a couple of other things that I'd like to share with you. This is something I shared a few years ago. I met a goddess on my return flight this afternoon. She must have been in a hurry to go wherever goddesses go, as she seemed to be anxious to deplane. She was behind me, struggling to get her carry-on from the overhead compartment. I turned and offered assistance, and she nodded. I handed her the bag, then stepped back into my seat, gesturing in a please-go-first manner. She paused, smiled very warmly, said thank you, and then quickly ran off the plane. How do I know that she was a goddess? When your heart is open, the goddess will smile warmly upon you. From the Aphorisms of Furman. If love is lost, kindness must prevail, based on the love that started it all. Anger and bitterness cloud the heart and soul, leaving no room for healing or being emotionally and spiritually available for new love. Forgive, forget, and move on. from the Aphorisms of Furman. Here's a little lighthearted poem that came through me about 7 years ago. It's called Ode to a Handful of Nuts. When you watch your girly figure or your very manly vigor, there can be no ifs, ands, or buts. For the snack that you should favor and the flavor you should savor should be a healthy handful of nuts. Nuts are very handy and so much better than candy, filled with good protein and fiber. A few grams of healthy fat, if you can just imagine that, so even your physician would prescribe her. There's poetic license taken at that point. So when your stomach tells you and appetite compels you to enjoy a light and healthy repast, remember nuts are crunchy and satisfy your munchies and won't add any inches to your bottom. Poetic license and cleanliness taken. I was in the woods near Sandyston, New Jersey yesterday. I turned around and was startled to see a huge black bear staring me right in the face. He sniffed me a couple of times and I softly prayed, saying, "Please don't eat me." He smiled and said to my surprise, "Don't worry, human, I'm on a GMO-free diet." The only way to liberate ourselves from old habits, bad relationships, and negativity is to be truly willing and ready to let them go. So many of us have a tendency to hold on to that which no longer serves us. It takes courage and directed intention. Freedom is achieved by letting go. There are those who choose to suffer, and this will be their fate. There are those who ask for deliverance, and often much too late. There are those who ask for healing, but are unwilling to take part. For those who truly want this change are ready in mind and heart. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Definition: a favor, an act of kindness beyond what is due or usual. I've come to ask you a favor. Synonyms: a good turn, a good deed, kindness, an act of kindness. Definition: service, the action of helping or doing work for someone. Millions are involved in voluntary service. Synonyms: favor, kindness, good turn, helping hand. Definition: the great gift, doing a favor or performing a service so that the recipient does not see it as a favor or service, and the grantor performer does it without condition or expectation of acknowledgement or reward. From the Aphorisms of Furman. When you get to the age that friends in your peer group start transitioning, it makes you think of your own mortality, how much time you have left, and what you want to do with that time. I, for one, choose to make the most of the time I have left in this existence and share what I've learned and have yet to learn with those who will take that experience and do even better things with it. And he said unto them, "Ye will surely say unto me this proverb, Physician, heal thyself." Luke 4:23. One of the hardest lessons for many healers, empaths, and spiritual counselors to learn, myself included, is to give ourselves the same loving kindness and caring that we extend to others, and the hardest part for many, know that we are worthy to receive it. Compassion must start from within. Love yourself first. From the Aphorisms of Furman. Life is like a great piece of music. It starts with silence, bursts into a series of crescendos and decrescendos, and ends with silence. May each of your personal symphonies be balanced, rich, and filled with mostly high notes and love. from the Aphorisms of Fermin. The Greek philosopher Aristotle coined the term horror vacui, commonly translated as nature abhors a vacuum. Simply put, empty or unfilled spaces are unnatural as they go against the law of nature and physics. Apply this to your life. Let go of those things that no longer serve you, that hold you back and inhibit your growth and happiness. Nature will fill this vacuum with new opportunities and people. Reflect on what did not work, with who and what you let go, and use this opening to make better choices based upon experience. From the Aphorisms of Fermin. The guru is human. The teachings are timeless. Take the best of the teachings, embrace them, and pass them on. Honor the teachings. There have been a couple of posts recently about disappointment with certain spiritual teachers. The guru, teacher, or spiritual leader is human. Many of the teachings are timeless. Take the best of the teachings, embrace them, and pass them on. Honor the teacher when worthy. Honor the teachings when you resonate with them. Honor yourself in the process. From the Aphorisms of Fermin. I know from experience and counseling others that grieving is an individual process, and each of us grieves in our own way. My process has always been to take care of the details, officiate the services, and support everyone through their grief, leaving my needs for last. When the busyness is over and there's time to reflect is when we must take care of ourselves and honor our personal process. This rock has cracked in places I did not know existed. When I was grieving for my mother, it became very visceral for me, and I felt it not only emotionally, but all through my body. I gave myself permission to take additional time off from work, time that my employer at the time was very generous with, but that in the past I would not have taken. I relaxed. I meditated. I zoned out and just let emotions work their way through me. My beloved Lori Sue hugged me when I needed it and also gave me space when I needed it. She totally understands this process, having gone through this with her mother, and I'm grateful for her loving support. I share this for the other rocks out there like me. Give yourself the permission to crack, to cry, to feel the pain of loss and the time to heal. I embrace you as brothers and sisters with total compassion and understanding. And I remember Paul Simon's closing lyric from the song, "I am a rock, and a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries, but we do both, and it's perfectly okay." From the Aphorisms of Fermin. Blessed are the caretakers, for theirs is the burden of love. From the Aphorisms of Fermin. Life in this dimension is finite. Our essential selves are infinite. As we mourn loss in the temporal, let us embrace the permanent and never forget that love is eternal. From the Aphorisms of Fermin. I'm going to close this edition of Vox Novus with a couple of poems that have come through me through the years. This first one came through me at a wonderful yoga and meditation retreat back in the early 1990s. I started having this sensation of seeing the numerical exponents, the power of one, the power of two, the power of three in my head. And this poem came through me, and it's called The Power of One. The energy flows from the love of the sun and charges a soul, the power of one. That energy shared with a spirit that's new, a heart opens up, the power of two. Ebbing and flowing from women to men, hearts on the wavelength, the power of ten. And when all the millions with compassion run, the birth of the new mind, the power of one. And finally, this poem, which came through me after my mother's passing and the loss of so many beloveds in 2020, the poem is called Circles and Rings. The path of great beauty in so many things, from atoms to galaxies, circles and rings, natural wisdom that dwells there within, from naught to 360, that magical spin. We circle each other in gravity's dance, as Gaia circles Sol, the solar romance, as Luna circles us in life-giving motion, drawing the tides and inner emotion. And the age of the oak is found in its rings, as in woman and man and all living things. And when the rings stop and life comes to an end, we'll all circle back and dance once again. Thank you for joining me this evening on Vox Novus. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.